I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, welcome to Film Fandango, the film podcast. I'm David Reed. This is Marek Larwood.
Hello, listeners.
And, oh my God, we've got a guest. It's been a while.
Finally, after 3 months, we've put some effort into finding someone to come in and talk about films. And not just anyone, someone who probably knows twice as much as me.
And three times as much as me. It's Mr. Rob Deering.
Nice. I like that talk up.
How are you, Rob? All right?
I'm very well, thanks. Yeah.
And this week, I subjected you and David to a film which you might not have enjoyed. This is my... it's almost like a backlash type thing, where having gone to cinema, and I'm not a big fan of action films and superhero films, and we've talked about in the past how cinema is now is almostly, that's a new word,
yeah.
Dominated by some crappy superhero film.
It's dominatedly, almostly,
entirely.
I'm the one and only dominator.
We're having to make up new words, Lee, to describe.
Yeah.
Just
now, there's only superhero films.
But I don't know what's going to happen, because their plan is for these superhero films to expand, to create greater franchises that are all incoming. I mean, it feels like nearly every film's a superhero film already.
That's
so what's going to happen when they double and triple in the numbers?
But there's a positivity to it, because they still have to be good. They won't sell if they're not good. They do have to be good.
I've seen some proper...
I'll take that back. Pacific Rim. Jesus.
That was one of the better ones, I think.
I think you need to go out and have a think about what you just said to me.
What are your favourite recent... superhero films do you think have passed the Deering test?
I just respect Marvel in general. Marvel are the Avengers side of things, aren't they?
Yes.
Yeah, so I think...
Well, they're also technically the Spider-Man and X-Men side of things, but they're owned by different studios.
Yeah. So I'm talking about that cycle. Avengers Assemble was good. Thor was good. Thor the Dark World. I haven't seen it. I want to see it. It looks
it's
terrible.
Good. It's better than Thor.
Oh, well, there's something. I like the Captain America films. I think there's general kind of wit, a respect for auteurs.
I mean, if you look back at what was happening before these films came out, if you look at Catwoman, for instance, is what was going on in superhero films before that. It's a shocker.
And some of that is still happening. The Green Lantern, Man of Steel, you know, a lot of them are dogs, and they will make money, but they won't make as much
money. A lot of the films I find, and I think I've talked about this before, so the first film is Origins film. Tedious.
Yeah.
So they only get going when they do the second film.
Isn't it wonderful when a film isn't an Origins film? For example, Sherlock Holmes.
Yes.
Really enjoyed Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, the idea of an Origins film where he decides to become a detective because he first discovers he has an analytical brain. Well, Young Sherlock Holmes is the origin film of Sherlock Holmes.
The good thing about
that's
Young Sherlock
Holmes
film.
Amazing.
Yes, it's
that
a really good film.
That was the first film when I was a guest on Film Fandango that I brought in Young Sherlock Holmes.
You did, I remember. Yeah. I remember. In fact, I am now friends of a friend. I don't know him personally, but he's one of these people who my friends talk about a lot, of having gone out, you know, spent some time with the John Watson from that film, who is actually Brian Cox's son.
What's his
actor
first name?
Brian Cox. Alan, is
Alan
it?
Cox.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
I met him in Edinburgh. Nice man.
Yeah, well, that was John Watson
of
in
course.
Young Sherlock Holmes.
Right,
there was a Victorian big improvathon thing that they do where people improvise an entire show for 50 hours or something, and all set in Victorian London, this one.
Did it start?
And
in
Alan
Victorian
Cox London? Got, I forget his name now, but the guy who played the young Sherlock Holmes to come, and they were Holmes and Watson.
Yeah,
for
what
the
was
whole
his name
it.
Though? I want to say Henry.
He looks like him. He now looks like an old Tom Bell.
He's in Snatch, isn't it, as well?
Yes, he is. He plays is it Snow White?
And there's a Guy Ritchie link. Ooh.
But I remember when I used to look at what judging what films are good. There's a program for people. We get a few, quite a lot of listeners from abroad listen to this podcast.
Yeah.
But there's a British.
Bonjour.
Oui, très bien.
Bienvenue.
There was a podcast program called Going Live, which is a kids' TV program. And Trevor and Simon did a film review? I can't remember. They used to do film reviews.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Sherlock Holmes, young Sherlock Holmes was on that because it was one of the first uses of special effects for the CGI. 3D.
First job of ILM, I believe.
Wow.
Industrial Light and Magic's first job was the stained glass
two-dimensional
light.
What I love about that, and it's very clever, is that it's very cinematic, but it's nicely Conan Doyle-ish as well. Mm.
Yeah.
It's
always
Nicholas Rowe is the name of
it. Nicholas Rowe.
That's even a good sort of Dickensian name.
I believe he was also in The Casterville Ghost, which was an adaptation of a Oscar Wilde story with Neve Campbell
Canterville,
thank you. Neve Campbell and Patrick Stewart as the ghost.
What happened to him? Because he was really good.
I don't know. I saw him in a play a couple of years ago, but...
Doesn't he also play Sherlock in the modern day one with Martin Freeman? Is that him?
That's an unknown actor.
That's an unknown actor. Okay, yeah. But you were saying that this documentary,
yes,
Looking for Light,
yes,
about June Brown. It's Jane Brown. That's a joke.
It's Bown, actually.
Bown.
Oh, damn it! Misprint. June Brown.
June Brown.
June Brown off of EastEnders.
Yeah, she. I saw some films of her in recently, a black and white one, when she was young. It's quite amazing because she's Dot Cotton on EastEnders. Looks like she's been 80 for the last 30 years.
Yeah.
She played us. If anyone listens can name this, I think she was a nanny or something in the film. But her looking young and.
You were attracted to her, weren't you?
Very much so.
And how's that translated now you watch her again now?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Because she was playing ancient women in sort of Gormenghast in the 90s. Yeah, yeah.
It makes me think of Nanny Deering, which is my dad's mum. And I remember my dad saying, about stuff he got away with when he was little, like stapling stuff to the wall and climbing up the front of the house. And I said, well, what did Nanny Deering say? That's what I called Nanny Deering.
Yeah.
And he said, and I quote, she was always old. So I don't know how it happens, but I think it's something generational.
Some people are, yeah.
Working class women from London in the 20th century, just they got that old thing going early on and stayed with it.
There are guys that you knew at school and may still know who have always been in their 40s.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. That's
smoking lots and lots of unfiltered cigarettes.
Yeah.
Or being unable to have fun. That'll also happen.
War.
What?
War does it to you.
So there you go.
Not been a lot of wars.
Edwin Starr's question: what is it good for? Prematurely aging a whole generation.
Great. And then you've got the actor to play the old actor for a substantial amount of time.
Yeah, that's very true.
Tell you who got famous playing old when he was, I think, literally under 20, but that was his first skill, and he was always being used for it. Is David Jason?
Yeah. Really? Who did he play?
He played all kinds of old. It used to be his job. He was like in rep, and they'd go to him for the old guy because he was little and he was good at it.
Wasn't
like Clive Dunn, who
I was going to say, he played the oldest guy in it, apart from Godfrey, probably. One of the youngest in the cast.
Exactly. It used to be a thing that you could do. You say, I'll be old, because no one had thought of casting actual old guys. Why that? Because, again, because of war, there weren't any.
But also, people aged it. And also, maybe HD has brought that a little bit, because you can see old makeup. Even, for example, like Benjamin Button.
Old makeup is always bad, though, isn't it? It's a real difficult one. I thought the old makeup on Hayley Atwell in Captain America the Winter Soldier was some of the best I've
seen. Yeah, I agree. I thought it was excellent. But it's now CG augmented, isn't it?
Yes.
That's done badly, it's a completely different kind of utterly creepy.
Yeah, and you have to watch it because Hollywood always convinces itself that they can CG faces, but you can't.
No.
Young
Beginning
Jeff Bridges
of Tron.
And Tron Legacy. Yeah.
That's terrible.
Awful. No one wants to see it.
That film would have worked, the whole CG Jeff Bridges would have worked as a thing if you'd never seen the CG guy in the real world, because then it sort of can be a stylistic thing that he is
what it looks like.
Exactly. He's been in the computer world so long it's sort of affected his face.
Yeah. Well, we're talking about faces anyway, aren't we? I'm trying to get us back into
this June Brown documentary.
So just to introduce you, backlashing, it's another new word, against all the action films, I decided to pick a film for us to watch, which is a documentary about June Brown, who you may not have heard of her. She was Jane Brown,
That's my fault. Fault. Sorry, yeah. Jane Bowne.
Remember that
Jane
name?
Bowne.
She's about 80 now. She's obviously retired. She was the photojournalist for the Observer, and she'd taken some of the some of the greatest portraits. If you think of a great portrait, there's a good chance that she's taken it.
Like the John Betjeman one. Is that those moments when you see a picture and you think, oh yeah, that is the that is how I picture
it's
that.
It's phenomenal. Her,
the Samuel Beckett one. Is
yeah, Samuel
like,
Beckett.
Samuel Beckett.
Mick Jagger. Also.
Bjork with her hand on her face. Yes.
But she takes black and white still photography, and it's a very slow documentary. Maybe not by the most skilled documentary makers, who are Luke Dodd and Michael White, and I enjoyed it. You can go and see it at the Curzon or watch it on the Curzon online. I liked it because I'd just been watching lots of British noisy television where all the young people speak the same.
It's certainly an antidote to noisy television.
Yeah, but I think that's the thing. I think that, it's a very negative place to start from, isn't it? I think if that's what you're looking for, then it does exactly that. But the problem with it is it does exactly that. I mean, I think this is a documentary which it's almost doing them credit to say that they're a little bit, that maybe it's simple and inexperienced, because I think slightly more, there's a little bit of a conceit to it. I think they were kind of going, look how boring we are. And that
really?
Kind of rubbed me up the wrong way. I thought the best thing about it was the pictures, which they totally let breathe. They would just put them on screen for seconds at a time, no voiceover, no music.
And they continued to do so. It wasn't like right up top, here's her photos, now you know her, let's carry on.
And that is the best thing in it. And yet, but it also makes you think, well, if that's the best thing in it, then this could have just been an exhibition. Because the thing I didn't like about it is that it seems to me that they're saying, here's a woman who was really good at her job, and now she's really old, and that is, they didn't add anything to those two facts.
Yeah. We got to know her a bit, which I did enjoy the whole backstory of how
long
she.
How long did it take?
Yeah, so I should explain what happens. Is she Jane Bowne now? Is I think she's about 18. She's wheelchair bound, and
Bowne Jane Bowne.
She's wheelchair bound.
Thank you.
And she, it's a sort of a retrospective look at her life, and then she's oddly taken round to see the gravestones of all her dead brothers, which is quite peculiar. But it's just about appreciation of her and how someone who wasn't a conventional journalist, I thought it was quite interesting, just a short, sort of polite, well-to-do woman in a world of photographers, which is dominated by that sort of paparazzi photojournalist, which typifies it more.
Well, knowing a tiny bit about photography, I found it fascinating. She never took any lights with her. It was all done with natural light. Incredible eye.
Yeah.
Incredible
eye.
She's
incredible. It was very pure what she did.
There were little snapshots of stuff I found sort of beautiful and really engaging. And I agree, it was slow, and there wasn't really enough of a change in it. It was sort of just.
Maybe I was being a bit resistant to it, but I felt like they were saying, it's sad because she's old. I'm like, it's not sad that she's old. She's just old. That's okay. And I think if that's not sad, which it isn't, then the documentary becomes borderline pointless, you know?
Here's what I liked about it. I liked the fact there are lots of old journalists, but it felt like, going back to, it felt that Britain 50 years ago was almost 100 years ago at times.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No, I completely agree, actually. Some of the talking heads are fascinating. There was a guy in a tweedy suit, can't remember his name, and he was a character from another age.
All these
and
old
people remembering the press room, and it was, they were talking about a world which was, in turn, pretty much unchanged since the 19th century.
And it wasn't, this was in the sort of 1950s, 1960s, when the Observer was set in this sort of building, sort of not a huge office, not a glitzy office, and it was old editors and other journalists and other photographers talking about how things were done. And you think, shit, things have changed so far.
Yeah. I mean, those guys were in a career for life. Like, they were saying how the boardroom would always be the same faces as the heads of department year on year.
Yeah,
these days, people would have gone sideways.
And they'd all
the
been working with the main man since, since the war. Mm. And she totally straddled that in that, you know, her pictures go from Winston Churchill to Bjork and beyond. And like you say, she was just a really simple character. She was just a straightforward woman who took these pictures. So yeah, it's like time travel, but it was also like time travel in that it feels like it will never ever end when you're watching it.
I really enjoyed it because I felt it was a really this film is, it's a Sunday night tonic when it felt it was almost like you need to reset yourself and watch something oldie Britishy.
It's a Sky Arts programme. It isn't a cinema experience.
I think definitely. I would go one step further and say I would rather have seen it as an exhibition, because I was getting annoyed with the documentary making gets in the way a little bit.
It could have been a 45-minute programme.
I would have worked harder, for example. I didn't want to hear the documentary makers' voices. There was so much stillness and silence that when they suddenly turn up behind the camera going, and you know, good documentary makers do that. They cut themselves out completely. And you should, if you're going to do something that kind of speaks for itself, then make the effort. Take the narrator out. You can't limp in with a narrator. You either author it and narrate it, or you don't. Yeah.
The narrator's either the protagonist in their own story or they're completely absent. I totally agree with that.
It felt a bit, they made this documentary too late, because I didn't know, I was worried whether she'd lost her marbles slightly.
But again, I'd go back to something else I didn't like about it. I think they slightly stereotyped her as an old woman. It took a long time to get to know her, because they kept showing shots of her house and her wheelchair and having her saying, oh, there's my cat. But like, plenty of young people have got cats. You just wouldn't include them talking to their cats.
And if you're just pointing a camera at them and not asking them any questions, what are they going to do?
I think it was patronising. She's a person before she's an old person. And this film definitely told that story the other way around. She was an old person before she was a person.
Maybe, I think it might be the case, because it was only 120 minutes long, or it was, not 120 minutes, 80 minutes long, I think.
Yeah.
That's almost the least you can to be a feature film or a feature documentary. You need to be like 77 minutes, I think, to set it. I can't remember what it is, so maybe it was a case of having to pad out.
And in a way, you know, don't get me wrong, I completely hear what you're saying about, you know, an antidote to tales full of sound and fury signifying nothing, but it could have been shorter. What you need to do is do what they did about letting the photos breathe. I love the photos of the silence, but I didn't like the shots of a house.
I loved hearing her talk about stuff as well. I actually loved hearing the people who'd worked with her closely talking about her why she was able to get these photos, because it's not just about the technical ability with the camera, it's about the ease with which she put her subject.
Yeah.
And because she wasn't a great networker or a great businesswoman or anything. She was just herself and incapable of being anything else. Mm-hmm. So that everyone just relaxed in front of her.
And that was what was interesting as well. For a documentary about someone who's a great still photographer, their camera work was shocking at some points. They did this odd thing you've never seen, like a slow zoom into someone while they're talking, where the camera they've got is slightly jolting, so it moves in.
Yeah, not clunk.
Yeah. Which is quite odd, actually. I think you could have made this really beautiful. But I thought what for me was interesting was, like you said, the old people talking who had something to say and were quite articulate, and it seemed refreshing compared to, I'm becoming literally really conservative, right?
Yeah.
To people saying this, young people saying the same thing the whole time. I want to see old characters. I want to see older people talking about
people
death.
Trying to remember people's names and stuff like that.
I like the old stories. I like their wrinkled faces.
I agree. That's what you want to see in a documentary. But you see that in better documentaries than this.
Yeah, but I found it very interesting. I thought she was very interesting. And she genuinely...
I would contest that. I don't think she was very interesting. I think she was her life is an interesting story in history, and I think she's brilliant at her job. But I don't think she's very interesting. That's part of the point.
I don't know. I think some of the things she said were very peculiar and very odd. Mm. And I felt like I wanted to know more of that. And they were slowly trying to peel back the cover of her. And towards the end, when she had a moment where she reflected what she'd changed in her life.
Yes.
There were some great moments there. And I felt like it didn't push hard enough to find underneath that
veneer. I found it utterly engaging, I have to say. I didn't find it dragging at all. It was slow, but it hooked me in and took it at the pace it was going.
Yeah, it very much wasn't a waste of time, and I shouldn't sort of joke about it dragging by, because that's very ADD of me. But but I think it could have been better.
Yeah.
Because she is a good story.
I mean, there are some
the pictures are amazing.
Brilliant documentaries we've seen. It's not up there with those, but I thought as a tonic to what we've watched recently, it was something for Pete. If you've got a heart problem,
but Ballet Russe. Have you seen Ballet Russe?
No,
it was like that, and that I much preferred.
What's that about?
It's about the Ballet Russe in its the heyday of the Russian ballet, which is, again, very 20th century, very interesting, loads of really interesting characters, but it was just. cut better. I'm as we're talking about it, I'm thinking maybe I came at this grumpy, but maybe I did.
It's not
but
a I thing to watch.
I feel like the people making it, rather than saying let's make this stylish, I'm not giving them credit to make what you enjoyed. I think a little bit they said this can be boring because it's a documentary. I felt like they were saying that, rather than saying let's let this story speak and breathe, which I'm bang into. I like it when things take their time. And I think they were, I don't think they quite had the chops.
Cool.
And it's incredible how different this work is from the stuff she's done on EastEnders.
Well, there we go. If you want something slow but entertaining, I'd give it 6 Marics.
I'd give it 7, David. And it was called Looking for Light, Jane Bowne, right?
Yes.
There was a Jane Bowne?
Who knows?
Okay.
Do I get to give it Robs?
I don't know if you want to or not.
You don't have to.
Is it from 10 Robs?
Yeah.
I'll get a 5 going on 6. Or do I have to commit?
That's all right.
And a half Robs is five, okay. Five if you want to split a Rob.
We do halves, but you could.
Just give me 20 Robs and I'll give it 10, but that gets confusing.
Okay.
5 Robs.
There we go. That's quite good.
Yeah, that's not bad. I'm glad I saw it.
4.
It's time for the blooming film challenge.
Film challenge. We've not done this in a while. We are going to pick our castings for a brand new remake. There's never enough of them. That Rob is going to judge who's picked the best castings. We've heard recently that they are going to reboot Flash Gordon.
Of course.
They're just working their way chronologically through the 80s until they hit every intellectual property along the way.
I have to say, conversely to that, of course, this can only go wrong, you know, because it's a very odd tone, the old one, and they just about pull it off.
The idea of doing Flash Gordon, I assume, without a Queen soundtrack already, it's going to be infinitely less charming.
Yep.
They're never going to hit Brian Blessed's character ever again. They'll cast Brendan Gleeson and he'll be fine.
Max von Sydow is going to be... There's so many tough actors, apart from Flash, and Dale. I think they're... two lead characters.
Yeah, even Topol as Dr. Hans Zarkov, formerly of NASA. That's going to be...
Topol.
Timothy Dalton.
Yeah, brilliant Prince
Peter
Baron.
Peter Duncan,
of course.
Battling with evil snot in a tree stump.
But Flash Gordon's become, in retrospect, over the years, become quite cool.
It was supposed to be a trilogy, and it didn't do well enough to make the sequels.
Oh, well, that doesn't surprise me that much. But it is one of those films where when you think that's a rubbish film, but I love it. That's a rubbish film, but I love it. And then one day you watch it and you think, in its own way, it's really good.
Yeah.
Because it totally knows what it is. It's really camp. It's really, I don't feel a bit like an idiot saying it, but it's really sexy.
Yeah,
it's good camp. It's like, whoa!
It's European, isn't it?
Yeah, it's fun.
I think the only difference between Flash Gordon and Star Wars, really, in how cool they are, is the art design.
Yeah,
rest of it is identical.
Yeah, yeah. And then Flash Gordon is definitely sexier.
Wizard of Oz meets Star Wars. The colours.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you think of Flash Gordon, you think of that. Those red and pink colours.
I think it's a massively similar tone to Wizard of Oz. It's scary, it's for kids, it's brightly coloured.
Well, it's Dino De Laurentiis, isn't it? The producer of Barbarella. It.
Yes.
So it's so high camp.
But it's your
road camp.
Barbarella's brilliant, but it's a tough watch.
Oh, it is.
Whereas it's your Brian Blesseds and your Timothy Daltons that make this much more fun than
It feels like an end of term panto of a film.
Princess Aura, my first love in cinema.
Is that right? Well, we're going to cast today, because there's too many characters. We may have to do this on a second week. But we're going to cast today Flash, Ming the Merciless, and Princess Aura.
One by one.
You're going to judge. Well, you're going to pick out of the two.
You're not going to give me Brian Blessed. You're not going to risk the
not this. Man. It's too hard. It's too difficult.
Okay, well, we'll have to make that the bonus card.
Okay. If there's a draw out
it goes
after
down
three.
To, down to
We'll do that.
We'll see.
You want to go first?
Okay.
I'll go first, all right.
Which character are we doing first, Rob?
Ming.
Okay, I went round the houses on Ming. There's quite a few good choices. He's got to be he's got to have that stature and that skeletalness to him for me. He can't be sort of powerful. He's got to be almost Mr. Burnsy, I think. I've gone for, just because I think he's about the right age for it now, I want to see him do another villain, Hugo Weaving.
That's interesting.
I don't think he's got... his face isn't symmetrical enough.
They can do it in post these days.
I've gone for a bald actor.
They would be able to shave the hair of a beheaded.
I could
actor.
Have done that. I could have gone. But I thought
Danny DeVito.
No, someone who's sort of been.
He's played, too hairy.
He's got his film career has gone from being sort of model, good looking to a villain, and I think he's just. I looked him up. He's about 48, nearing 50 now. It's time for him to. And I think he's more talented than he's ever. He's got more talent than he's ever shown on screen.
Mm-hmm. I can't wait to hear who this is.
Billy Zane.
Oh, listen to your friend Billy Zane.
Yeah.
Billy Zane. Billy Zane, the Phantom himself.
Billy Zane is interesting. I like both of those. I see where you're coming from.
Billy Zane's got the
Billy
eyes.
Billy Zane,
I can
for
see
me,
it.
Is too good looking. His features are
old
soft.
He's old enough now.
Yeah, but he'll always be gorgeous.
You paint the eyebrows on.
But he's got lovely eyebrows and they're lovely eyes and lovely big mouth. Hugo even looks like, but he's played so many bad. I was impressed with how good he was as the Red Skull.
Yeah,
having already played that many bad.
Can I change mine?
Well, is it Mr. Agent Smith? Is obviously the one he'll be remembered as forever.
Mr. Anderson. Can I change mine?
Do you want another go after Billy Zane? Billy Zane was a good
bit. Really change
you can't
it.
Change it. But I'm interested.
I've got
who
got
else?
A better one. My other one. Back
you can't enter someone else. But who
entering, would you... But Stanley Tucci.
Ooh.
As a really odd choice.
Very odd. I'd say he's too broad-shouldered.
Yeah, and also, I think this is kind of like reverse of what you're saying, Billy Zane's skills. Stanley Tucci's skills are legion, and yet more and more as he gets older, he's better and better just playing roughly the same character. Even though he totally doesn't have to. But in things like Easy A and Judy and Julia, he just turns up and Stanley Tucci's it, and it's like a charisma bomb. It's fantastic. He could play it like that, but that would be weird.
What I've done is I've put that in there to make Billy Zane seem better.
Oh,
it was,
that's clever.
He's bald, and it's exciting. Hugo Weaving wins.
There we go. There we go. Okay, Marit, you go first on the next one. Who do you want, Rob?
We're saving the best till last. So, Flash.
Flash.
Right, this is controversial, and and it's not a traditional actor, and it's based solely... I'm a big fan of American football.
You've picked an American footballer?
Well, because Flash Gordon
he's
New York Jets, New York Jets quarterback. I watched American football non-stop, so if Rob hasn't seen it, I'm screwed.
Yep.
I think one of the best quarterbacks at the moment, who's brilliant in the advert, who's really, really funny, is Aaron Rodgers.
Mm-hmm.
And he does these discount double check adverts and lots of American adverts.
Do you know who this is?
It doesn't matter.
He's charismatic. He's a quarterback.
Before you even said anything, I thought the thing is about this guy, doesn't need to be an actor.
And that's
you
the thing.
To pull someone
the
from
guy
someone
who played him, Sam, what's his name in the
Jones.
There's rumours that he got his
Bown.
He got dubbed.
Sam Bown.
He got dubbed, didn't he? I had rumours that they redubbed all his lines. He was
I think that's an urban myth that's come across from Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Oh, okay.
In Hercules.
But he was terrible in. He's the worst
Bown.
In the Bound
Flash. Bown.
An American sports star, an actual quarterback.
What's his name again? Aaron Rodgers.
Aaron Rodgers.
Good name.
I was going to go for Peyton Manning, the ultimate.
Sam Jones. Peyton Manning sounds good in that all modern, young, good looking American.
He's not his old one, but Aaron
Rodgers.
Yeah,
but
is
they
guy.
Have. They all have.
I'm going to get a photo weird, of
yeah,
Aaron Rodgers,
do,
Channing Tatum.
We need to know that.
I want your beard while he's getting his picture.
Okay, well, mine is. You know, I think there's actually a fairly shallow pool of actors who I would trust with this
Shallow's
role these
good.
Days. But
he looks like the comedy other guy out of Scrubs. The irritating bloke with the. You know, he's gone way down in my estimation. Have you got someone a little bit more Aryan looking?
I can do Peyton Manning, who is the ultimate quarterback.
He's old, though, you just said.
He's my age.
Yeah, old.
There's Peyton Manning. Not that there. He's what funny.
Oh, he's a bit bald.
Yeah, these are bad.
Anyone who's listening in the States will know.
The current number... Because it doesn't have to be an exciting choice for Flash. It just has to be the right choice. It's the
like Hugo Weaving.
Like Hugo Weaving. The current blonde everyman muscle man. I've gone for Chris Hemsworth.
See... Yeah, and he'd be great in a way. How much are we trying to keep the camp of Flash?
I think we have to. It's got to be. There's no point Dark Knight.
I don't
want to
be
Gordon,
too serious about it, but Chris Hemsworth is already Thor. I don't know if he's going to do it. You'd do better with Ryan Reynolds or something.
You think
like
you
that.
Can only be in one franchise, and you're really putting you're right, wanting you're not, this to run and run.
Yeah.
Because I'm thinking Cabin in the Woods, Chris Hemsworth. You know where he's playing sort of the star quarterback
of
the school.
Yeah, he would be great. You know, you should never have shown me a picture of Aaron Rodgers.
Listen, all the people who listen to in America, it's approximately 70 per episode, will be saying, of course, Aaron Rodgers.
He looks wrong. He needs to look like Doc Savage or Mr. Incredible, and he doesn't. He looks like the other guy out of Scrubs.
All right, David's
Chris
already
Hemsworth.
Won.
Yes.
David's already won.
Okay. Well, for the consolation for Marek...
Shouldn't have shown me a picture.
Well, we can make it interesting or patronising, well, depending on
go
how
for
you find it.
Go the hatching, go for the sweep, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So, well, Marek, how would you describe the first woman you fell in love with?
The most beautiful woman in the world. But you... also, like, sex... one of those ones who's very beautiful, but yeah, a bit dirty.
She's a bit dirty, isn't she?
You sound like the bloke talking about Anna Scott in Notting Hill.
Oh, I'm a girl.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I've gone for... Because you, Marek described her as that to me before you arrived, Rob. So I've gone for someone who I think has that girl next door, but...
She's not girl next door at
not,
all.
Well, no, you're not no, girl next
from,
door,
she is
but
from
as
space.
In attainable. Yeah, okay, girl from planet next door. But well, she's a princess but has a sort of glint in her eye. I've gone for Mila Kunis.
Okay.
I thought it was an interesting choice. I thought of going for her, but mine is a bit...
She's got to look a bit exotic. She can't look airy.
I've
got
to say,
one.
After Billy Zane and Aaron Rodgers, this has to be good.
Okay, I'm going for the woman in Modern Family, Sophie Vergara.
Oh, yeah, I see what, you, oh, I know what you're saying to me.
Because I think she's absolutely stunningly beautiful.
She's good, she's
and
funny,
bit,
she's gorgeous.
She's
and,
40.
And sexy. Yeah, but I think, so what? Ming's
no, that doesn't
be,
matter.
Okay.
Let me just get... I'm just helping...
I've got to say, at this stage, before you say anything... I like Mila Kunis. I really.
So Sofia
like
Vergara is it?
Mila Kunis.
Mila Kunis isn't as.
Don't say dirty again.
I'm not going to say that. I'm going to say that flirtatious.
Mila Kunis. Just to
she's
a tick
the voice
against
of Meg
my,
or Family Guy.
She is. She is about to be in an enormous sci-fi franchise. I've just remembered.
Which one?
Is it called Jupiter Rising?
That's okay. That's going to flop.
Okay. It's got Channing Tatum in it.
I thought it was a funny. I thought it was a funny moment when I realised what Mila Kunis looks like because I knew she was the voice of Meg on Family Guy, and there's something not quite. There's something kind of in-jokey about the jokes about how ugly Meg is on Family Guy.
Yeah.
A little bit hatey. Mm. But you feel like, oh, they think it's funny and it's okay. And then when I saw Mila Kunis in real life, I kind of thought, oh, and I got the whole joke because, yeah, yeah, you know, she's actually quite good looking.
She looks like a cat,
right,
doesn't she?
She does look like a cat, yes.
It's Mila Kunis. It's a sweep. Your ideas are terrible.
What I said to David, I said, I've gone for quite obscure, risky ideas. And as usual... In the world of film and in the world of comedy, risk is not rewarded.
I think that they need to be. They needed also to be good ideas.
That's yeah, that's
the clincher.
True.
That's what you.
I think if it was an American podcast, I would have been at least a 2-1 up.
Yeah, no one fancies Mila Kunis in America.
No,
I always get pissed off at this.
You do. This is the point where the podcast just takes a dive in energy.
Well, I have to admit, you know, if we're going to be kudos, I agree. I think that you there's something a bit Route One about your choices.
Oh yeah, yeah,
but
I acknowledge
they are,
that.
But they're really good choices.
That's what we have the same argument as you before. Why the same people get cast and the same things the whole time? We get frustrated.
It's
like,
so
you've
exciting.
Just done it. You've
so
done
exciting.
It. You've
when,
just done it.
Yeah, but when you cast people who are unrecognisable, you have to cast them well. Otherwise, you're knackered, aren't you? Watchmen is the film where you don't recognise any of them, and it plays so well as a result.
That's true. I remember watching Watchmen, seeing the comedian, and going, spot on.
Yeah,
absolutely spot on.
You don't get it. It's amazing. I mean, even like you say, when they're making big money, it's amazing how seldom Hollywood know this that casting a recognisable face can play against your character because people are, you know, they know. And then you, and when you look back at people who are really famous now and you see them at first, you see how much more legroom they had to act. Morgan Freeman
original...
in Driving Miss Daisy.
Yeah,
whoa,
yeah.
He's acting all
he's
over the place,
it, right?
That's right.
That's right, yeah.
That's right.
He's Dune Bound.
Hey, we should do the middle bit where we talk about if people want to write in.
Oh, yeah. Well, we're going to move on to Rob's choice of film, but if you'd like to write in and have your letter read out, then please do email us, dearfilmfandango@gmail.com, or you can contact us on facebook.com/filmfandango, or tweet us at filmfandango.
Nice one. And if
you can also follow Rob Deering on Twitter.
Yeah, do you want to
he
promote
He is
anything?
An attorney in San Diego.
Okay.
What's your... Have you got a website?
I am on Twitter. I'm Deering Rob. I'm on Facebook. You can go to robdeering.com. And my comedy music quiz, Beat This, which takes place every month in the Lion N16 and the Edinburgh Festival, is at Beat This on Twitter.
And you're doing a show in Edinburgh this year.
Music Face!
And that is on... when
you laughing every time I say that is good.
It's your enthusiasm.
It's actually the oversell. Damn it, that's okay.
And when's it on for people going to the Edinburgh Festival this year?
Thank you for asking. 7:45 Assembly Rooms.
Get your tickets now on edfringe.com, right?
I can recommend myself.
It'll be very good. Go and see it. And if you like spending money, you can always donate to help the running of this podcast, which is for free, which you can do on filmfandango.co.uk, and really helps us out paying for the Libsyn, what David does, all this science stuff.
I'm paying for Rob's exorbitant rider and all of these things.
Hey, I need those nuts.
Good ad lib.
It's right there. There it was.
There it was, right there.
Straight off the cuff. I had that on my cuff.
We asked Rob to bring in a movie for us to talk about, and it's one that I'd never seen before.
I'd never seen it before.
Not even by accident on TV.
Not even by accident.
Well, I'm jumping straight in before you've said anything.
Yeah.
I hope and I trust that because of seeing it now, you've sidestepped the... It was one of those films that had a really dreadful TV cut for years, like The Fugitive.
I can see that. Actually.
And I think you probably got it fresh. Yeah. That's good.
Well, what is the film? Why don't you tell our listeners about it?
It's a wonderful film. I think people who know it love it. And it has been on TV like at 11 o'clock on a Friday night. About a million times, and I don't know, it'd be interesting to see whether you think it's dated at all. It's the brilliant classic buddy movie road trip comedy thriller Midnight Run.
And can you tell us what it's about?
Midnight Run, okay, it's Robert De Niro. Before anyone respects him for doing comedy, he's playing a brilliant light comic turn as Jack Walsh, ex-policeman and bounty hunter, who goes after Jonathan the Duke Mardukas, who is played by Charles Grodin. He's a brilliant comedy actor. And brilliant because he's a comedian, and Robert De Niro obviously is, you know, Raging Bull, etc. But they're such a good double act. And it's a lovely story, and he has to... It's a midnight run. It's an easy gig. It's a midnight run, for Christ's sakes. He's got to get him back from... He lives in LA. He goes to New York, and he's got to get Charles Grodin back to LA in 5 days.
Meanwhile, the mafia.
And in the end,
get him to the Greek.
Basically,
it's basically a remake of Get Him to the Greek.
It's a remake of Get Him to the Greek. He's got to. It's just him. He's got to do it himself. And up against him, he's got the FBI. They want to do it. There's another bounty hunter who's just a fantastic
brilliant.
Character, and the mafia. It's all to do with Jimmy Serrano, played by superb Dennis Farina. I think one of his first big roles, I would say, and you know, and his goons who are after. So he's against the world, and plus there's travel issues. Brilliant, significant, wonderfully written travel issues, and I just think it's a great film. I think it's perfect.
I watched it a few years ago. I remember really enjoying it, and I watched it again for the podcast. And it is great. You know, when everything is done well.
Mm-hmm.
I think the tone, there's something uplifting
about the tone. I was going to mention the tone.
How would you describe the tone?
Well, I think it's, I think you're right. I think it's got a, I think it's got a really good proper heart to it. Because it's a cynical, it's a very masculine film, very gunsy, mafia, police. I mean, probably one of the weakest things about it, but that kind of sums that up is, over and over again, people get punched in the face to knock them out. You know, that trick of punching someone in the face to knock them out, like in the A-Team. And yet, it's got this kind of hippie-ish heart to it, you know, which comes from the Duke, the Charles Grodin character. He's a proper old hippie. He's not a hippie like Neil off The Young Ones. He's an accountant and he looks smart. But he believes in people and then he believes in doing the right thing. And he can say hello in a lot of languages, you know. And ultimately, in a really subtle way that would be overly spelt out these days, he believes in Jack Walsh, in the Robert De Niro character, in a way maybe that character doesn't in the first place. But it sounds like there's all this kind of learning and stuff, and there isn't any, but that runs right through the film. It's got...
Tonally, it remains light. And what I thought was impressive was it never gets too dark with its stuff. It goes places, but it never gets too dark, and it never goes totally Police Academy either.
No, absolutely.
Everyone is performing in the same film. Mm-hmm. And I know that sounds weird, but often they're not. Like, you wheel in one guy to do a comic turn, and he's seemingly in a different film to the lead role, who's in a really serious film.
Absolutely.
Robert De Niro plays it perfectly, and you're right, the central buddy movie dynamic between the two of them is beautifully
and it really
written
plays
and performed.
Because it's hilarious, and it's hilarious right through. I mean, it's one of those films also where the big laughs will come just when it means something or something dark or serious has happened, there'll be another perfectly well-earned, not fighting the story at all, big laugh. Like, there's a bit where... Oh, it's a great bit where they... Because, what does he say? Charles Grodin says of the Robert De Niro character, you've got two forms of expression, anger and rage. And brilliantly, Robert De Niro says... But and then so later on, Robert De Niro is literally
silence and rage, isn't it?
Silence and rage, yeah. Silence and rage, of course. And later on, Robert De Niro is not talking to him at all. So Charles Grodin starts being both of them and improvising both of them, and trying to make him laugh. And it's just so.
And he improvised the whole thing with chickens. Didn't
the chickens,
yeah. He improvised all of that because the director before the take said, "Do something that it will definitely make Robert laughed.
Surprise! Ah,
so he surprised
wonderful.
Him with this whole thing about whether he fancied the
There's
chickens.
Some good-looking chickens in the primer, Jack. and then so Robert De Niro breaks his silence. Just yeah, I could have taken a pop at one or two of them.
He's so that Charles Grodin's character is so dry, and the humour is so great from him. Mm-hmm. You don't really see that character. Yeah. And what's interesting as well, I forgot how good Robert De Niro was at doing comedy before he started gurning and doing... Now, you think of Robert De Niro comedy, you think of him doing an old man, doing his sort of Godfather-esque sort of gurning expression.
His really Meet the Parents onwards, basically.
Yeah, really straight comedy, and properly... These two, this friendship's really interesting, odd characters that you
and
won't
it has levels
see
because they do, and it has deep levels because they obviously... I mean, in the end, they kind of love each other. You know, in the next life, in another life, but that's so subtle because really they're just they're not friends, they're brothers. That's the thing, they're brothers in this, and also it's got that level thing because the Charles Grodin's character is trying to irritate the Robert De Niro character. He's not just irritating him because like I don't know, like a less like a more crass comedy character.
He's not a pure innocent irritating... either. He is manipulative.
He's playing the card. He is trying to rub him up the wrong way. He's trying to make the trip as hard as possible. And that in itself is funny because you know he's doing it.
I found his character the most interesting because you never know whether he is actually completely bullshitting him all the way through, whether he is just actually a crook.
And,
or
that in turn hides a brilliant reveal.
Yes.
Which is there, which is hidden right through in plain sight. Mm. And then there it is. And look, I've kept it. I've kept that secret, so stay with it. But the other thing is you talk a lot about them and they are amazing. But all the supporting characters are brilliant. I mean, it's a great early role for Joe Pantoliano, who's done more high profile stuff. He's brilliant.
He's in the Goonies as well, wasn't he? Was that before that?
He's been in the Goonies before this.
But he was in a minor role in that. No, he came through in sort of Bound. I can't remember what.
Yeah, and he's well, the Bound is
the
after
Matrix.
Yeah,
and all of that.
And he's in the Fugitive. He's in as well, but he's so venal and weaselly and just so not like anyone else. It's brilliant.
Fantastic
and he's totally
role from the FBI guy.
Yeah, Fett Cotto.
Yeah,
he's so.
Beautiful.
He's got a great face, isn't he?
Yeah.
I love his face.
Oh, just
and again, the
you
relationship.
Want him to be pissed off, that guy.
Yes,
he's best when he's pissed off, and he ramps it up so subtly, but he does get more pissed off. As he goes along.
But there's a mutual respect there, and then there's the guy talking about people who aren't famous, so they get to play different roles. The guy,
Beverly Hills Cop guy.
Beverly Hills Cop guy. What's his name? I don't know.
The one who plays the not Judd.
God, it is him, isn't
not
it?
Not Rosewood, but the more straight down the line. That's what's great about it. See, in that one, he's the straight down the line, by the book cop. And this is within a couple of years of that, same director, and he's playing a grubby... He basically plays the person the Robert De Niro character thinks he is.
Mm.
The unscrupulous, grubby, trampy, horrible bounty hunter. But he's got the same skill set.
Yeah.
They're both really good at the job. Mm. It's just that this guy, Marvin, isn't good at anything else. And, that relationship is good. The baddie's really good. There's a couple of lovely cameos. There's an odd cameo with the guy in the coffee shop. And it's almost like a dream sequence.
Mm.
He says, tough day, tough week. Yeah, I know what you mean. And he gives him his moment. Oh, it's great.
It feels a bit like when you've got a football team. This is my allegory for it. And you've got people... You've got this team that are... They're all good players. But for some reason... They just click.
Mm-hmm.
So they're all really good, and everything works together perfectly, and they make a great film. That's what it feels like. It's surprising because everything just clicks into place, even though they're not all famous people. They're all perfect in their roles, and this film, in other hands or with other actors. Has I think other versions, similar films to this, have been made really badly.
Yeah, yeah.
With different actors.
And it's not just the cast. You like I know exactly what you mean, and it's the same because it's exciting and it's funny and moving, and often at the same time. And there's a scene, a really exciting action scene, with and it's shooting and cars and all this business, and the shouting dialogue, but the dialogue is hilarious. The tension, it's the three of them, it's the two main guys and Marvin in the car. And, just excellent. Some of the best swearing. You know?
Even the soundtrack's quite odd, because it's quite sort of caperish.
I was going to mention it because my wife cannot stand that. It's a real stumbling block for her, because she didn't see the film at the time. It's Danny Elfman, so it's good stuff, but it's very much of its time.
It's
but
quite I think Dukes I'd like of Hazzard the, in tone, yeah, isn't
it? I think, it grows on you, I think.
Yeah. I want the Midnight Run theme tune played at my funeral, because I think there's a real heart to it, and I love it. Da, bam, 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 and it also just rolls on, just keeps on coming. Da, ding, 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 bam, bam, boom, ba, ding, ding, drops down to the bass.
That's it.
Oh, it's so good.
Only in the 80s could you have that sound. Only in the 80s.
Only in the 80s. And it's so, yeah, because like so many films, like My Cousin Vinny and all other films, it sounds like the band in a bar in the Midwest of America just jamming.
Yeah, yeah. It feels at heart like a Kurt Russell movie. Do you know what I mean by that?
Yeah. That's a lot of that.
It's that period,
better than most.
Oh yeah, definitely.
But yeah, I know exactly.
Maybe sort of, you know, Big Trouble or Overboard, one of those.
Why did you pick this film then?
Two reasons. One, it really, you know, I've loved it ever since. I saw it at the time. Actually, I don't think I saw it at the cinema. So it's a real VHS. I went to university and I watched it over and over again for all of the 3 to 4 months I was there. and me and my best mate there, Ferg, we just, you know, and it's a great film for talk around. It's eminently quotable. You know, we're talking about quoting things on Facebook. You know, it's a great one for just quoting and quoting back. The script is so good and so many kind of pull out laugh lines. It is one of my absolute favourite films. But aside from what it is in my life and how I've always had it, and you know, I love the Jack Walsh character. I love that it's one of those things. You know, you see yourself getting old, because I remember him being old. Mm. And he doesn't look old anymore. He looks the same age as me.
Like when I first, you think they're both people in their 50s.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And you go, what they're about. Around 40.
Yeah, maybe a bit older. And looking at Robert De Niro, so you see, because of course we still know him and he's still famous, he looks really young in this. He looks closer in age to Godfather 2 than now, because he is, you know. Well, that's
but the other guy, is it Charles Grodin?
Grodin.
He's only really been the dad in the Beethoven films.
Yeah, he's never done
his most famous role. And he's brilliant in this. Really absolutely good. Brilliant. I'm just parroting IMDb, but what more research is there? Actually, they were looking at Robin Williams for that role, and they auditioned Charles Grodin and just stopped contacting there Robin Williams. They just went, no, we found our guy.
And also, there is that element of him being all the better, because he obviously steps up and the balance is great. But Robert De Niro is the top actor here, still very much a serious actor, and lots of people wouldn't have known who Charles Grodin was. Yeah. So he's got that, like we're talking about Watchmen, he's got that unrecognisability to really give so that the character gets all of his charm and charisma.
It's a terrific performance by De Niro.
There's a scene in it that I always come back to, and this is one of the reasons it's my favourite, because it's so wonderful, and it's a serious scene, but it's so lightly played, and it's so, like you say, it doesn't spoil anything, it doesn't take away from any of the fun of the rest of the film, and it's not. And it's funny, and it's over in a few moments, but it's all the better for that. When despite all their instincts, the fugitives, the bounty hunter and his mark, have to go back to visit Robert De Niro's ex-wife and daughter. And it couldn't be better. I think for me, if I was making a list of the great scenes, which I actually do quite often, this would be one of the great scenes. Any scene of any kind in any film, when they go back and see the
daughter's heartbreaking as well.
She tries to give him the babysitting money. Oh,
I thought she was so good. I actually looked her up to see if she became somebody else.
Yeah.
As in someone I'd recognise. Yeah, yeah. But no.
And she's perfect.
She is really.
And he is so ashamed. He's so ashamed in front of her, and he's not going to get back together with his wife. You know, it's a really complicated.
Yeah, it's not Die Hard. It's not the Die Hard cop.
No, not in the slightest. And it just sums up. It works all on its own, and yet the whole story of the film, the whole crux of Robert De Niro's emotional journey, is all in that moment. And again, It sounds serious, it sounds dramatic, but it's funny, just loads of jokes. And Charles Grodin making it. The guy, they've got the her son is there, who isn't Robert De Niro's son, is like the son from the guy she's married to now, who there's a tension with the story, just makes great sense. And he says, you're a criminal. And Charles Grodin, just after a little beat, says, I'm a white collar. Oh, it's good. And when he is, and he's the relationship, because he's intervening in their realm.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
I don't think she was saying, oh, you shall. It's really. It's great. So you have to watch it, if nothing else, for that scene.
Yeah, so you can watch that on the internet. Buy it legally.
I have to say, I wanted to watch it again, but I've got it off iTunes, and it won't work on my iPad. So,
oh really?
A, this whole conversation is tinged with sadness because I'm stuck at Chen Lu.
Sad. I'm sure it's available on DVD.
Mm.
Yes, I mean, I felt that my only sort of criticism would be
watch it.
Don't worry, I'm being careful. There's no point criticising something you love so much. But I thought it could have been half an hour shorter, to be honest. Just in the middle, there's a structural hiccup of thing. They get circumvented in similar ways a couple of times, you know? But apart from, I thought, actually, the relationship needed the amount of time it's been given, you know?
Yeah, and I also think that there's a great, it's a really neat trick, but it's totally justified and sort of... plays out in drama and comedy of how the travel works.
Yeah.
It's how in one way it takes ages and is really difficult, but when they want it to, they can do it in a second.
Mm. I love a film that sets up its premise that boldly at the beginning and just goes, this is a journey from here to there.
Yeah, that's yeah. That's... It's an easy gig, it's a minute run, for Christ's sake.
I still don't really understand bail bonds and how that all works, but...
I don't know, there's a flaw slightly before that, is how did he come to put up the bond? How did it come to be him? But we don't need to get into that.
Don't worry about that.
But what I love, it made me think of that, I love that game. Do people still do this? I have to look online. Years ago, there was a club of Americans who would go to the cinema and clap when they heard the title of the film. So they didn't have much of a good time at the Shawshank Redemption, but they had a great time when they went to see Dad.
Okay.
But yeah, I love it when it's an easy gig, it's a midnight run. You know, when you hear the title like that, and you think, there it is. It's a midnight run.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's about it, I think.
Yeah.
Have you got any just... what time is it now? It's quite a long one. have you got any films just that you thought you've seen this year that you'd like to recommend? You think are good that people might want to catch up on?
I think family films are great at the moment. Don't be cynical if you haven't got children. Don't go, oh, it's for kids, about films like The Lego Movie and Frozen and other ones from the last couple of years. Madagascar 3, Europe's Most Wanted. Who knew how good that would be? That's a great film.
Do you think it's the case? Because I have an inkling it might be that in-house Disney has now excelled Pixar in their latest releases.
Oh, I agree. But I think Pixar are like the Coen brothers. They'll be back.
Yeah,
but
I hope so.
I don't think they're as good on sequels, you know, apart from Toy Story accepted.
Yeah.
But I don't want to see Cars 2, Monsters University.
But that for me, rather than they're not as good at sequels, that for me is sequels aren't as good and they're losing their nerve a bit. That's
yes.
what that feels like to
yeah,
me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But other sequels, but DreamWorks also, you know, because
Madagascar... How to Train Your Dragon 2, I'm looking forward to, because the first one was wonderful.
I've heard that's terrible. But I haven't seen it.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
I really hope it's
good. Despicable Me 2, great film.
Yeah.
Cracking film. And yeah, Madagascar 2 was weak. Madagascar 3 is just heartwarmingly, surprisingly good. This year, the brace of Lego Movie and Frozen. Is it Frozen? It will be an absolute Disney classic.
Okay.
There's hardly any other Disney films as good.
I like Paranorman when I saw that. Paranorman, rather.
Yeah, I haven't seen it. I was slightly resistant. I'm slightly tired of zombies.
But
you can't hold it against
the actual... The graphics, half of it was stop motion, were great, really, really great.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm sure, I think Paranorman's the good one, but I think culturally, and this, you don't want to get into this now because you want me to go home, but I think that the idea that someone said, you know what kids need? Zombie movies. They don't. They don't need zombie movies. Zombies are for deeply critiquing contemporary consumer culture, like in the original Romero trilogy.
And simultaneously... guiltlessly hacking at human bodies.
Yeah, well, that's the part I'd slightly disapprove of.
Yeah, yeah. less for kids, that.
You don't need the rom-com. I don't need a rom-com zombie. I don't need kid zombies. I don't need Pride and Prejudice and zombies. In fact, I'm anti.
Western zombies, has that been done yet?
Is
country
it?
And Western.
Well, I think West...
Country and Western.
Country and Western.
West World.
Westworld.
Robotic.
That's robots. That's killer robots.
Yeah, I know, but he's a bit like a
That's
zombie,
Wild West Terminator.
He's not like that.
Terminator, isn't he?
Yeah.
That's a brilliant film. Anyway, we better wrap up. Thank you so much, Rob.
Thank you.
For coming on. Is there anything else you want to plug?
No, but come to meet this. Come to Music Face and follow me online. Oh, and gigs. I'm always doing gigs.
All, and they can look, find that on your website.
Yes.
Which is, again,
robdeering.com.
There we go. Sign up for mailing lists. It's always good when people sign up for mailing
lists.
Yes. And you can contact us at Film Fandango, at David Reed.
Mr. David Reed.
At Marit Larwood. All that rubbish.
At Deering Rob, not Rob Deering. He really is an attorney in San Diego. I don't like to bother him.
Well, thank you very much, everyone.
David Reed is a... DavidReed.com is an attorney in America as well.
Oh, they're going to sue us.
Marit Larwood's a sex offender in London.
We'll be back next week.
Keep watching the films.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.